Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm really excited about the rest of the hour today because we're going to talk about two incredible parts of Massachusetts history and how they intersect. So one is the community of New Bedford, which if you know anything about its past, there is a good chance that you know it has to do with Massachusetts' legacy around whaling. And the other is Frederick Douglass, the black intellectual and former enslaved abolitionist who made history repeatedly in the 19th century and remains to this day one of America's most compelling figures. It turns out those docks, the whaling industry, the port intersected with the Underground Railroad, a demand for labor that didn't care about one's past, and an entire multicultural community that led to freedom for Douglass, who called New Bedford his first home after escaping bondage in Maryland. It is a fascinating part of the Commonwealth's history. Joining us now, we have two guests. The first is Lee Blake, president of the New Bedford Historical Society. Lee, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Kanasorn Wongsrechanalai, who is the research director at the Massachusetts Historical Society. Kanasorn, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much.
So, Kanasorn, I'm actually going to start with you to round out the picture. Just briefly, that couple of sentences, who really was Frederick Douglass?
Frederick Douglass was the greatest abolitionist of the 19th century, and he was a fantastic orator. He was a champion of African-American civil rights and freedom, and he's a really, really important person in American history. He touches on so many themes in our past, and he's really important to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. He loved Massachusetts, and Massachusetts loved him back.
All right. So with that in mind, Lee, now I'm going to turn to you and sort of the same sort of speed there. Tell us how Douglass gets to New Bedford.
So when Douglass is 20, and sometimes people forget, he was a young man. When he is able to escape from Maryland, his fiancée at the time, Anna, prepares a suit of sailing clothing for him. She was a seamstress. He gets on a train. And because seamen were so ubiquitous at this time, no one ever questioned him. He was going from Maryland to New York, another port. And when he gets to New York, he goes to the docks, kind of hangs around, careful and fearful that he could be recaptured. And when he's on the docks, he runs into David Ruggles. David Ruggles was one of the most prolific conductors in New York. And after a conversation with Douglass, he sends him to New Bedford because Douglass has the skills of a calker. He has boat building skills, and he's sent to New York. Anna comes up just before he goes to New Bedford. They get married overnight. The next day, they're on a steamship coming to New Bedford, and they meet the abolitionists in Newport, Rhode Island, and they're in New Bedford. It's an incredible story with an illustration of how the Underground Railroad worked, how the conductors would talk to people, find out what their skills were, think of the best place to send them. And for Douglass, it was just New Bedford was the place. Whaling, looking for people who had shipbuilding skills. He had the ability to come to New Bedford. And the other important thing is because of the whaling industry, there was really this whole environment where community members worked very hard to make sure that people of color were safe in New Bedford.
So that is so compelling. And Kanasorn, what Lee has just laid out is a lot of intentionality, right? This is not a stumble somewhere story. There's guidance, intentionality, advocacy, risk-taking. There's a love story here. Talk a little bit about the intentionality of Douglass's life, the choices that he makes for himself as he settles in New Bedford, and how the community affects those choices. Oh, I think I might have lost Kanasorn. So, Lee, I know that you are both capable of, you know, laying this stuff out. Let me turn that same question back to you.
So there are lots of ways that Douglas makes, you know, very intentional desires here. He brings his wife. They're going to start a family. He's 20. She's 21. They're married now. They're in a place where they feel safe. And I just wanted to give you a little quote from what Douglas says about walking around the docks in New Bedford, walking around the Black community. He says, "I now find that I could have landed in no part of the United States where I should have found a more striking and gratifying contrast to the condition of free people of color in Baltimore than I found here in New Bedford. No colored man is really free in a slaveholding state. But here in New Bedford, it is my good fortune to see a pretty near approach to freedom on the part of the colored people." So he actually feels like he could have a future in a place like New Bedford. He's working. He's going to start a family. Go ahead. I hear you.
No, it's okay. I was just, you talk about he could have a future. It's not just a future. I mean, it is one heck of a future. This is an incredibly historically influential person. Does he launch his movement? Does he launch his oration, his writing and speaking in New Bedford? From New Bedford, I guess, is maybe the better word?
Well, he does, because one of the first things that happens is, of course, now he's married. He's living with Nathan and Polly Johnson, who are our middle-class African-Americans. They're free. They are Underground Railroad conductors. And they work with him, first of all, to give him a new name. So Frederick Augustus Bailey comes to New Bedford, and he's transformed almost immediately into Frederick Douglass by receiving a new name, a new baptism in many ways. Mm. Nathan is actually reading a book on, Our Lady of the Lake, and the heroine in there is a Scottish lord, and his last name is Douglas. So, you know, Nathan says to him, you know, you're here, you're in New Bedford, you need to pick a new name. And it's so interesting, because this happens a lot. The people who run away, they want to honor the people that helped them. So Douglas says, well, I would like the name Johnson. Nathan Johnson, Douglas. But Nathan says no. Nathan says, you don't know how many Johnsons there are in New Bedford. I'm suggesting, and he suggests to him, I'm reading this book, and, you know, the hero is Douglas. And Frederick likes that. And Frederick says, you can take any name away from me except my first name, Frederick, because that is the name that my mother gave me. And for many of us, we know that Frederick only saw his mother maybe 3 or 4 times in his whole life. So he keeps the name Frederick, and he takes Nathan's suggestion, and he becomes Frederick Douglass. And the intentionality then just goes on from there.
So let's pick it up there, Lee. Excuse me for interrupting you, but we do have Kanasorn Wongsri Channel
back
with us. Yes.
Hey, so, welcome back.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
That's all right. So let's pick it up there. Lee has laid this out beautifully for us, this new baptism, as she said. And we've talked now about New Bedford giving Frederick Douglass that founding. Let's talk for a minute now, Kanasorn, about what Frederick Douglass begins to do to shape New Bedford and shape Massachusetts.
So Douglass learns something, sees something brilliant in New Bedford. And he writes about this in one of his autobiographies. And he sees free labor in action. This is a world without slavery. And I think his words are just so powerful. So I'll just read a quick passage here. This is Douglass. "I heard no deep oaths or horrid curses on the laborer. I saw no whipping of men, but all seemed to go smoothly on. Every man appeared to understand his work and went at it with a sober, yet cheerful earnestness, which betokened the deep interest which he felt in what he was doing. as well as a sense of his own dignity as a man. And that's really important for him because he understands how free labor can work in the North. And he also gets involved in the anti-slavery movement. He meets William Lloyd Garrison in Nantucket. He starts to go on the road to start lecturing for them. But Douglas soon learns that the North is not this paradise because he encounters segregation. So this is early on when trains, locomotives are new to Massachusetts, and Douglas is riding them everywhere. He gives speeches and lectures all over the place. And he runs into trouble early on in about 1841 when he's riding to go to New Hampshire to give a talk, and they throw him off a train, a segregated train, because he's unwilling to sit in a car that is only for black people. Exactly right. And this happens again. And he's thrown off the train. Now, the people of Lynn protest this. And later when Douglas moves to Lynn, the superintendent of the train basically says, let's just not stop the train in Lynn so that this troublemaker Douglas can't get on, which is ridiculous. And the people of Lynn, of course, protest, and they have to reverse that. But Douglas faces discrimination on the railroads in 1840. This is 50 years before segregation becomes the law of the land. So he sees that there are problems in the North as well. He still comes back to Boston again and again throughout his life, even when he moves away. He recruits for the 54th Massachusetts, and he faces down mobs and he lectures again and again. A testament to how important he is to the state is the fact that his words are on the Senate chamber, right underneath the rotunda of the Senate chamber on Beacon Hill there. Douglas's words, truth, justice, liberty, and humanity will ultimately prevail. This is from a speech of his later in his life.
So, Kenneth Sorn, thank you. This is kind of the arc, right? He comes to New Bedford. New Bedford shapes him. He then shapes both New Bedford and the Commonwealth. Lee, I want to come back to you now. For just a minute, if someone wants to come to New Bedford now and learn more about Douglas, they can.
Well, they can because the house that Douglas lived in, the Nathan and Polly Johnson house, is a small house museum. It's open, and people can make appointments to come and see what the house looked like. But also, we are continuing the legacy of the abolition movement and Douglas as an organization. The Historical Society is now in the process of building a new city park, Abolition Row Park, which will have a statue of Frederick Douglass in it as a young man. And we did roundtables with the community and asked the community for their information and their preference. How would you like to see a statue of Frederick Douglass? And people didn't want to see an older Douglass. They didn't want to see a prepared orator. They wanted to see a young working man in his 20s coming to New Bedford and being excited about looking forward to having this wonderful new life as a free man. So we are working on those things. Mm-hmm. And in a year, we'll have a park and a statue that carries on the legacy of Douglas and many of the abolitionists at the time who were active in New Bedford.
And Kenneth Sorn, turning back to you one last time, just a minute or so to go, other resources that you would recommend to people who want to learn more about Frederick Douglass, his life in the Commonwealth, the effect that he had here?
Well, I would actually start with the words of Douglass himself. Douglass was very keen on speaking, and he understood the power of education and the power of his words. He gave multiple speeches. You can find them in libraries all around the Commonwealth. And the power of education, I think, is really important to him.
Is there a favorite of yours?
I have a favorite passage or sentence that he wrote, if you don't mind. This is when he's learned the power of education. This is when he's still enslaved and he learns how to read. The thought of only being a creature of the present and the past troubled me, and I longed to have a future with hope in it.
All right. And on that note, Kenneth Sorn, Wang Sri Chanalai, Research Director at the Massachusetts Historical Society, and Lee Blake, President of the New Bedford Historical Society. Thanks for coming on air to teach us a little more about our own amazing history today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, and that is our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening and calling today. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.